This podcast is sponsored by the Marching Roundtable Judges Academy, found at judgesacademy.com. Byron Valentine of Zydeco and Lexus Winter Guards and Derek Smith of Interplay have proven that guard shows don't have to be somber or overly serious to be successful. And certainly these designers have created some of the most entertaining and well-loved shows in recent memory. Is there a stigma to shows which are happy?
I just feel that so many people think, well, if I do this fun show, or if I do this pop song, or if I do X, Y, and Z, that I'm going to fail. Mm-hmm. To which I often reply, what's the problem with failing if you're loving what you're doing?
On this podcast, we hear entertaining stories about some of their shows, why they made the choices they did about the tone and style of the show, and they share great advice for designers that anyone will benefit from hearing.
I think that you have to allow yourself to make mistakes and to not beat yourself up over something that you feel super passionately about. We have all been completely invested in a program before that was a massive failure, you know, and that's okay, because without those massive failures, you're never going to grow as an artist.
Shows don't all have to be serious and dark. We challenge you to think differently about shows, including happy shows. A great conversation with two talented designers, Byron Valentine and Derek Smith, on the Marching Roundtable. This podcast is sponsored by the Marching Roundtable Judges Academy, found at judgesacademy.com. Dr. Joe Allison, one of the Marching Arc's most respected and experienced judges, has brought his expertise, together with Tim Hinton from the Marching Roundtable, to create an innovative new series of online courses offering judges training and assessment education for everyone interested in the Marching Arts. The online course allows each student to progress at their own pace while being paired with a mentor who's a top judge in our activity. The course is for aspiring judges or for active judges to improve their skills and expertise. But there's also valuable information here to benefit designers, directors, instructors, and spectators. Find out more at judgesacademy.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Marching Roundtable. This is Tim Hinton. On the line with me tonight, Mary White. How are you, Mary?
I'm doing so great, Tim, and I'm very excited to talk to these two guys, someone who we've respected and their groups we've respected for a long, long time.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, we've been talking about wanting to talk to these guys for such a long time, and anybody that's listening, just know that when we put these podcasts together, sometimes it takes a really long time to make them actually happen, and I have been so excited about this. So anyway, on the line, Derek Smith. How are you, Derek?
I'm awesome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. And also on the line, Byron Valentine. Byron, how are you?
I'm pretty fantastic. Thank you for having me as well.
Yeah, well, we're so glad you guys are here. We're going to talk about happy guard shows, or at least guard shows that aren't depressing or sad or whatever. And you guys have a real knack for that. And I just want to say that I'm so impressed with both of you. I've been impressed with your work and what you've accomplished and everything I've ever heard about you for a long time. So it's a real honor to meet you, and I want to thank you again for being here.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay, everything you've heard is true, by the way.
I'm 100% accurate.
I'm absolutely sure that's true. So first off, if it's okay, Mary, if you don't mind, I want to start with a couple stories. Is that okay
Please.
With you, Mary?
I'm always okay with that.
Okay, so if you guys will indulge me, I've been so excited about this. So I want to tell two stories, one about each of you. Okay, and this is very unorthodox way to start a podcast, but I have to do this. So picture it, 2009, we're in Dayton. Mary, you're there with me, right? Because we often go to Dayton together. We're sitting there, out comes Interplay, and we're like, oh, they're always good. They're always fun. I can't wait to see what this is. The show is the most wonderful time of the year. So, Derek, I want you to know that I think I had the exact experience that you wanted me to have. So, let me describe it.
Okay.
So, let me describe it. So, the music starts, and the first thing I say is, oh, my God, it's my favorite all-time Christmas song. I can't believe it. What is that doing being played right now? And then he starts to sing. And then at some point early on, I'm like,
holy crap, they've changed the words. They're talking about me being here in Dayton. I just had this epiphany moment and I just started laughing, like out of sheer joy. And I want you to know that I just smiled and laughed the whole way through that show. And I literally watched the whole thing with tears in my eyes because I thought this is the most brilliantly produced and fulfilled idea. I just loved everything about it. At the end, I was on my feet, just cheering. So I wanted you to know that it is now, without a doubt, one of my all-time favorite Winter Guard shows. And I have been, anybody listening, I have been going to Winter Guard shows since 1982. That's how old I am, when I was in Nashville watching the Cavvies with their Jets show. So, Derek, thank you for giving me that experience.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm glad that's the experience you had, that we were, that's what we were going for. You know, everyone, everyone loves this. So, like, ah, here we go. And it just turned out to be very, very special. So I'm really glad. Thank you.
Well, I loved everything about it. I mean, I often think back on it. And to me, it was like, okay, this is everything I want a Winter Guard show to be. You know, like I'm happy. There's tricks. I remember this thing where the rifles come throwing out from the back and this the change of equipment and just the whole thing was put together in a way that I just loved. So I don't want to talk, I mean, this isn't really our topic tonight, but I wanted to ask you, can you briefly tell us, how did that idea come about? Because it was so beautifully done.
As most things, it just kind of all of a sudden happens. I do remember what I thought of it. I was just down at family Christmas and, you know, mom had the Christmas station playing on, you know, the TV, and that song came on. I've always loved that song too. And I just happened to be thinking about, Interplay at the time, about just something that we had to do. You know, this idea came to me the previous winter in 2008, and I just happened to be thinking about Interplay at the time, and then that chorus came and I was like, oh, all right. And I didn't think much of it at the time, and just later went home and thought about it some more and printed off the actual lyrics, and then, you know, just started scribbling and erasing and writing some new lyrics, and just floated it by a couple of my friends and staff members, and they laughed out loud and said it was a ridiculous idea, but that they thought it was funny. And right. So I, you know, just thought, what the heck? And it just, through a friend of mine, another director of Interplay, had a contact here in Grand Rapids at a studio called River City Studios. And, you know, I said, obviously we can't just, you know, dub me in singing the words. That's not going to work. So we went into the studio and just and they pitched it to them, and they were I couldn't describe their reaction. They were incredibly excited. They do all kinds of professional commercial work, and they just thought this was such a great idea, and they just want to run with it like it was fun for them too and creative for them. And they, you know, honestly helped us set the whole thing up. They brought in people to audition, and we got to pick the vocalist, and he was, you know, spot on.
It was amazing.
He just killed it. And we were there for this whole collaborative process. And we started in April of 2008,
right,
with the process. And the final thing was finished, at the end of August, we got the final piece. What was amazing, though, about the studio was that they couldn't just take out Andy Williams' voice and stick this other guy's voice in. They had to completely delete everything underneath it. So they took it upon themselves and recreated all of the instrumentation underneath.
Oh, my gosh.
And
wow.
They did all of that. And, you know, when I, after WGI at the end of the year, you know, went and showed them the video, and they were just really excited. So it was a really cool, process from beginning to end. And, you know, the kids just really loved performing it. And it was really gratifying to see people just smiling and having fun. And, I think everyone has their own memories, and, you know, we, connections and to people and to places and to shows, and to, this is my favorite Guard show. And I remember when we were at this high school practicing, all those things I think kind of just started coming back to people when they heard the show and, you know, heard the lyrics, and
right,
it just really meant a lot to have such a positive response from so many people. And, you know, gosh, you hear it play at WGI every once in a while. It's just kind of funny.
Oh, yeah.
That it's still, they're advertising it.
It's still out there, and it's humbling. It makes me really happy that, you know, something like that had an impact on people. And so it was just one of those things that, you know, you can't predict. It's going to be, you know, I said this could be a total disaster and people, you know, would be like, what are they doing? Or they would be loving it. And fortunately it was the latter. And it really was a wonderful time. So,
yeah. Well, you know, Derek, all the best shows I've ever done started out that same way, where everybody thought it was ridiculous. You know, like that you can't do that. That'll be, you know, or whatever, or like scratching their heads or laughing. Like, I think all the best shows, or a lot of the best shows, start out with that reaction from people.
Yeah.
Cause it's too big. It's too incredible to even imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I loved it. And I think it also was special because you made it so personal. Like, it was personal to me because I love Wintergard, and you were talking to me. You know what I mean? Like, it was just genius in that way too, I thought. I think a lot of the best shows make me feel good about myself.
Yeah.
As well as the level of nuance involved too.
Oh, yeah, of course. Now, does that sound crazy to say and make me feel good about myself? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
No, I mean, but that's when you go to a play, when you go to a show, when you go to anything, you want to go out feeling good. It's the same experience with that Wintergard show. You want to be smiling.
Yeah, absolutely. Love it. Thank you for explaining that, Derek.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
Okay, so Byron, I have one for you too. You still with us?
I'm here, yeah. I was reflecting on my own experience watching the Interplay show, and just listening to Derek talk about it was, I'm always interested to hear other people's process of how their shows, you know, begin and evolve and culminate. I thought it was just a wonderful show, and I had a similar experience to you, Tim, where I just found myself smiling throughout it. But to me, what was most special about it was watching the performers, because they had such an undeniable joy on their face, from count one to count, you know, 1,000 at the end of it.
Right.
And you knew as a spectator that they knew that it was a very special show and a very special soundtrack. And that's, you know, to me, that's money right there. That's just like, you know, it's awesome when you know that the kids are so emotionally invested in it. And I just thought that was what made that show great, was watching the kids perform that. I mean, obviously the soundtrack and the concept was completely brilliant, but watching the performers buy into it hook, line, and sinker was what made the show outstanding for me.
Yeah, they really brought it to life. It was a real, because I think, you know, they could offer that to other people, but they all had, as performers, they had their own already memories and loves of Wintergard, and right. That I'm glad that came through for them, and they were definitely the reason that it worked. You know, they really bought into it, and they just sold it, and I'm very grateful for that year and that experience and those kids.
Yeah, and you gave them that great experience and that, you know, like that show that they could have that experience with. So it's a win-win all around. Very cool. Okay, so Byron, fast forward to 2012. Mary, you and I are sitting in Dayton again.
Again.
And it's A-class. I'm pretty sure it's A-class finals on Friday night. And if is that, that's when Lexus went on with the Four of the Boys, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so Mary, we're sitting there, and we were in this state that I like to call the Dayton malaise. You know what I mean? Like, you've sat there all day watching shows and you love it, but at a certain point, they all start to run together. And especially sometimes when it's ballad after ballad after ballad, which is one of the things I want to talk about tonight. So anyway, Byron, I'm sitting there, out comes Lexus. They're in these great little, you know, Mary, help me describe this. Like, Andrew's sisters sort of.
Yes. Yeah. That was the inspiration, the Andrew sisters.
Absolutely. Exactly. And so I just want to say that show woke me up, and I was, again, I had this sort of experience of joy, like, oh my God, I love this. It was so clever. I think there were like these coat racks, right? And then the girls changed costume, and like everything about it seemed so perfectly constructed. And I, as a show designer, I so responded to that. And I was having such a good time, and it was joyful, and they were having a good time. And I just loved everything about it. The end of it, I remember jumping up and embarrassing myself by yelling out and going, "Now that's what a card show is supposed to be!" You know, like I hate to be the old fogey that gets tired of the dramatic ballads, but I mean, I was so joyful watching that. So Byron wanted to say thank you for giving me that experience, and of course for the experience you gave to those card members.
Thank you. It was a really great experience. It was actually my first season working with Lexus, and Rocky and the team down there were very receptive to me just bringing pretty much whatever I wanted to bring to them. And I actually went down, and Rocky Bender, the guard director there, jokes about it. He says, "You never know what you're going to pull out of, you know, your bag of tricks." So I went down there with, like, I think 4 different show concepts for them. And because I wasn't familiar with the color guard. I didn't know their personalities. I just knew at that point in time that they were a bunch of pretty girls from Kentucky, and, you know, and that was really what I knew about it. And I thought, well, I'm going to offer them several things, but I think that I felt passionately enough about the Bette Midler music and about just the look of the wartime singers, the Andrew Sister Singers rather, and
right.
You know how that whole vibe just made me feel, and it felt very correct as I sat in front of the members the very first time after we had decided that we were doing that show, and I looked out over this just sea of really breathtakingly beautiful young ladies from all over Kentucky, and I just thought to myself, this is going to work, I think, and it did.
It sure did. They were rocking it. I loved it. That was a great fun time.
Well, and you know, you tapped into things that make me feel good and make me emotional. Like, we all have this connection to the wartime stuff, to the Andrews Sisters, and to Bette Midler. And
right.
Then, as Derek said, Byron said about Derek, the performers really brought it to life, and they were having such a great time performing it. That is so contagious.
Mm-hmm. And they were beautiful. You're
they
right.
Sure were.
They
stunning.
Were beautiful.
Yeah. Stunning.
Yeah.
And it's just it's fun when you can bring something like that show that also then forces the performers to do a little bit of investigative research on their own to discover. You know, I really like it when programs make the performers work a little bit, when they have to do their homework about, you know, either what period it was from or what the, you know, what was going on in the world at that point in time. And I love things like that. And I thought that they did, those kids did an exceptional job of that. And I think that that's why they were able to bring to elevate that level of performance, because, you know, truth be told, I really wasn't in with Lexus very much that season. I only went in 3 or 4 times, and, you know, they just have a great team of people that, you know, that actually do all the work there. I just kind of, you know, proposed the show to them and, you know, went in, did a couple of things here and there and designed the costumes. I mean, really and truly, it was that team that brought the show to life. But I will say it was a fully realized vision that, and, you know, so yeah, I guess I have to commend them as well, because they did wonderful work with it.
Well, right. And, you know, as we're going to talk about the fact that all shows don't have to be serious and dreary and whatever, you know, look at this show. It meddled, you know, it was fan favorite. And I mean, it was wildly successful in my estimation,
right.
You know? And so, you know, if anybody starts the conversation about why shows are like how they are so much of the time with the, well, you know, it has to be, well, I want to use this as an example. So the reason we're talking tonight, and this is my last story, I feel like I've told stories all night so far, but my last story is, I was sitting this year, 2014, at the Orlando WGI Regional, and before lunch, I saw a show about kidnapped children, cancer, war crimes, bullying. It was very somber. And literally by the time the lunch break came and I got up out of my seat, I was like, I really needed a break.
And I
remember walking up the stairs, and there stood Tony Florio, you know, doing the recording thing with his company. And I know Tony, and I looked over at him and I said, I would pay someone a huge amount of money right now to please do a happy show. Like, I think there's a place for all kinds of shows. I'm not saying I don't want to see a serious dramatic show. I love them too. But there seems to be like, that's all I was seeing. You know, nobody was giving me a break. And so Byron and Derek, both of you guys, you've had great success. You know, Byron with Zydeco also, you know, like these are shows that are great shows, but they don't necessarily make me want to run out and find a Xanax, you know, which is the way I felt that day, you know, like just, right. Oh God, please somebody help me. So I want you guys to talk about that, not only why it's that way, but how, you know, how can we get people to do these shows that are a little happier and more accessible, maybe?
I feel like there is for some reason, a stigma over people with the concept, with the idea of producing a show that's happy, that's funny. And I actually have a story as well. And I won't name any names, but I used to work for many, many years with a high school called Centerville High School here in Ohio. And when I first started working with them, liked to do more fun, more upbeat shows. And we had success with that, and we had great failure with that. So, you know, for me, it was a mixed bag. But I remember in 2004, one of the very first shows that we had done well in the Scholastic Open class the year before, and had been promoted to once again be competing in the Scholastic World class. And that season, we were doing a show called Make Someone Happy. And we were wearing bright orange velvet unitards with smiley faces all over the floor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, three really, really, again, period songs, but songs that just brought you to a time, it made you feel something. And to this day, that's still a show that I'm very emotionally connected with. And it's one of the things that I'm most proud of that, you know, that I've ever been a part of. And I remember we went to the first show, and there were two really, really, really wonderful judges there that, Meepa, at the circuit at the time that we were competing in, had brought in very, very well-respected judges in the activity. And I remember sitting up there. This was the first show. It was what we called an exhibition show. So we performed twice, once for the audience and then once for the judges to kind of give us some one-on-one instructor feedback. And I remember sitting up there with Jody Fairbanks, the director of the Color Guard at the time, and these two judges kind of looked at each other, and then they looked at us, and the female judge looked at the male judge and just kind of shrugged her shoulders and said, "Well, do you want to start?" And he looked and said, "Well, I'm not really sure, you know, talk to us about the show." And I just remember thinking, what don't you understand about this?
Right.
You
know, right. I mean, it's just being happy.
Yeah. It's just the show's called Make Someone Happy. And we're doing all of these happy shows. And I'm not really sure what you're not understanding about it. But I think that at that point in time, and I haven't seen this lesson. There is a stigma involved with doing shows that are a bit more upbeat, a bit more energetic, a bit more fun. And I think that people feel that they're going to fail if they do shows like this competitively. So I feel that too often people are leery to just jump outside of the box and just try something that makes them feel good. And I'm a firm believer of doing shows that make you feel good, not only as an instructor or director, but are going to make the performers feel good as well. Not every show can be happy. Not every show can be joyful. There is certainly a time and a place where you have to explore other artistic avenues. But I just feel that so many people think, well, if I do this fun show, or if I do this pop song, or if I do X, Y, and Z, that I'm going to fail. Mm-hmm. To which I often reply, what's the problem with failing if you're loving what you're doing? You know, is it really so wrong to have a year of failure? If, you know, because with Centerville in 2004, we certainly, you know, competitively, we made Scholastic World Finals in San Diego, but we weren't in the top five. As I recall, I don't think we were even in the top 10. You know, we were in the bottom five of Scholastic World Finals, but I am more proud of that show than I am a lot of things that I have done. And it's because to this day, I have people that will come up to me and say, I remember when Centerville did Make Someone Happy, and they'll just go on about how awesome that show was and how it made them feel. So I think to myself, well, I did my job competitively. Did we walk away from that, you know, in an amazing position? No, but you know, that amazing position now 10 years later holds no bearing to me. What holds bearing to me is the fact that people still love that show.
Well, and the kids still love it. I'm sure they look back fondly on that time and that show and those memories as well. They probably don't even remember what place they came in.
Right, exactly.
Well, I think that's the experience. Well, I can speak for myself. I mean, that seems to be the experience. You know, you remember the performances and your friends and the experience of marching. And, you know, that to me is the real trick. So it, Derek, you think it's driven by everybody wants to win, right? And they think that there's rules?
I don't know. I think everyone has just their own, everyone has their own style and genre. And, you know, you listen to certain music and it clicks with you and it might not click with the person next to you, or you have an idea that really works in your head and the person next to you maybe doesn't quite feel the same way. I mean, I think we all have our different strengths and things that we're interested in. But I do think that sometimes you mentioned maybe there's a stigma. I don't know if there's a stigma, but I do think that sometimes a really happy, upbeat show can be looked at as being maybe less complex to put together, or maybe it's, you know, people are afraid that people aren't going to think that they're maybe as sophisticated because they're out there having a really good time or really, you know, entertaining. And I think there's lots of different ways to entertain, but, you know, being upbeat and, you know, happy and, you know, I think that actually, you know, to pull those kind of things off so that they're really enjoyable for the audience, you know, you don't want it to come across as being cheesy or, you know, that kind of thing. So I think therein there is a lot of sophistication and thinking that goes into making that happen. And, you know, I don't know if that's part of it, that maybe, you know, people will think that will not think of them as seriously if it's, you know, fun and upbeat as opposed to something a little bit more dramatic and somber, as you mentioned. I don't know. So maybe. But I think, you know, more so people probably, I mean, I know at least for me, it just is kind of what clicks for me that it could be just that one day or that one week that all of a sudden something starts to really jive, and it, you know, may or may not be super upbeat or whatever. But, you know, I just think it maybe is more just where everybody's personal interests and strengths are. But, you know, as Byron said, it's really cool to, you know, branch out and just try some other things, because it's kind of like you never know what you're going to really like or be good at until you try it. So, but that is scary for sure.
Well, Derek, Derek, you have two guards this year that both made finals, and both of them were terrific.
Thank you.
Really terrific. And, you know, I think you found like you said, a terrific formula of also being sophisticated and happy. Because it's really maximized itself. I think this year, I love this year's shows.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Now you can go, Tim. Sorry.
No, it's fine. I was going to say that after what Derek said, you know, I think it's easier to do shows that are dark and serious than it is to do shows that are fun. Like, I think actually making a happy show work is harder. I mean, I've found that experience when I'm doing band shows. Like, you know, almost anybody can get their kids to be dark and serious and dramatic and play dark minor sounds. And, you know, but to pull off a show and really make it work that's happy is hard. I don't know, Byron, do you think it's harder, or is that just me?
I don't know that I'm not sure that I don't know, really, to be honest with you, because it's hard for me to say. I think there's a challenge emotionally with finding a range of emotion in the performers when you're doing a happy show, because happy is happy. You know,
for
you
sure.
can use every vowel in the alphabet on your mouth, you know, to express a couple of ranges of emotion. But I think sometimes when you're picking a show that is a bit more serious, there is a wider range of emotions that you can explore, whereas with happy, you know, happy is happy. And but I don't know that I necessarily think that it's harder. You know, one is harder than the other. I would say that I found challenges in both. You know, two years ago, I did with you know, my team, I did a show that was the opposite of happy. I mean, and I certainly have worked a lot of shows that are not always fun and light and cheerful. And 2 years ago, and I found it very challenging personally to work with that program and to, as far as, so I guess what I'm saying is in context to what you were saying, that it's more challenging. I found it very challenging. I think for me, maybe it's because I'm just kind of a a fly-by-the-seat-of-my-pants kind of guy, and I like to have a good time. So for me, fun shows, I like that, and I can kind of really dig into those. Whereas with something that's a little bit darker, a little bit harsher, a little bit more complex, I have to think a bit harder about that, I guess is what I'm saying. So, yeah, but I don't know. And honestly, truth be told, I don't know why we don't see more happy shows in the activity. I always equate this activity, you know, we call this activity the sport of the arts. And if we think about the first part of that, the sport, you think about how you feel when you're watching sports. You know, if you're watching a football game or a basketball game or a baseball game or a great swimming match or a great gymnastics match, you think about how the sport makes you feel, and there, you know, it makes you feel happy, and it makes you feel excited, and you get into it. And sometimes I have to agree with you, Tim. I've found myself very disenchanted with the activity the past couple of years, because I go as a spectator and I want to feel that way that I feel when I'm watching a sports show. You know, I want to get personally invested into it, and I can't get personally invested into something that, you know, just sounds like, you know, a soft moan for 4.5 minutes. You know, it's just not, you know, it's just not my cup of tea. So I hear a lot of soft moaning soundtracks, unfortunately, these days. And so I just, you know, I like the sport of it. And so that's, you know, that's what I'm more drawn to. And I don't know why more people don't want to up the ante when it comes to the excitement factor.
Well, I do think that it has a lot to do with the perception of what's acceptable or what will be rewarded. You know, it does. This conversation makes me think of the Oscars, because almost every year there are these incredibly talented comic performances that are almost never rewarded. And yet someone, you know, has cancer or they lose a leg or whatever, and they're suddenly they have a statue. And I'm not saying that those performances aren't amazing, but I do think that there's a bias generally that somehow the more dramatic, darker theme is somehow more valid or valuable.
That it's harder to achieve that quality, that it's harder to achieve that emotional range than it is to, you know, put a smile on your face. When in reality, when you're standing in, and you know, I'm sure Derek, you would agree with this, when you have kids standing in the University of Dayton Arena staring upon thousands and thousands of faces, the last thing they want to do is smile. You know, like they're terrified, you know. Right. So
but you have to teach them through that process the whole season. They're terrified, but to be in love with their show. And I bet both of you have taught kids to be in love with their show for a variety of reasons, not just because the music is happy or the content is happy, but it's about something greater. Don't you think it's about their life and what we face in our life? We have to, you know, sometimes we have to go past that.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, that's the great part about being a designer is the process that you take with your performers when you tell your kids what the show is going to be, and then you spend the next 6 or 7 months teaching them how this is applicable to their own lives. And when you get that Oprah style aha moment, and when you see it on their faces, be it, you know, day one or the day that they walk off the floor with tears in their eyes because they finally clicked with them, I think that's the best part about it.
Mm-hmm. And I think too, regardless of, you know, I mean, all of us have been in the activity and for a long time, and the happiness that the kids feel, whether their show is particularly designed to be happy or whether it's more dramatic, or, you know, that I think that that inherent feeling of joy, however they're expressing it through their performance, can be more so a manifestation and evidence of the actual experience that they're having. And that's what, you know, apart from the content that necessarily is offered on the floor, I mean, you can just tell when that group of performers is, you know, they're going to be best friends for the rest of their lives because of this experience, regardless of the show they perform. And I think that, you know, whatever the soundtrack is, that resonates with everybody too. You can just really tell when these, you know, kids are going to be able to call each other 10 years from now and say, "Hey, I haven't talked to you in 10 years, but I'm in town. Can I come over?" And we're like, "Oh yeah, we'd be loving it."
Exactly.
You know, that, I think that, that joy, whether it's expressed through happiness or, dramatic content or whatever story you're telling, you know, that's, I think that's where that really swells from, is the experience that they're having throughout the course of the winter, throughout the journey. You know, as Mary said, you're working on that. You're working for that to come from them from, you know, day one. And that's, you know, from, yeah, teaching them how to spin and, you know, talking to them about the show, but just really the relationships that they're forming with each other too, I think are just, evidenced really strongly by how they perform. And that's also, a big part of, you know, me watching and loving Color Guard, whatever the show is, you can just really tell when the kids are loving what they're doing and that they're going to be addicted to it like we are for the rest of our lives.
But both of you guys are so good at building color guards that when I watch them on the floor and Tim watches them on the floor, we say to ourselves, those kids are loving this. You know, and we're really putting ourselves with them on the floor and saying, oh my gosh, you know, they are just in love with color guard, not only loving this experience, but in love with this whole experience. And I think that comes from you guys.
Thank you. I'm not sure that that they always love me, but I like to think that the programs that, you know, we offer and that we all offer, you know, we do think about the best interest of the kids and having that sense of family with the kids and you know, I think it is common that most guards do form that kind of family bond.
Yeah.
But I agree. You can tell when the kids have bought into it, when they have bought into the program, you can just tell it on their faces. And, you know, it's like we were talking about earlier. It's just, that's an undeniable sense of performance that, you know, we don't always get to see on the floor, but when we do get to see it, be it as an instructor or as a spectator, it's a really great feeling to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, Byron, I'd like to return to something you said earlier on, because I think this was one of the things that was key. I just want to return to it for a minute. Earlier, you guys were saying that you responded to a certain kind of show, and that's why you did it, right? And like, maybe it was Derek that was saying, you know, this is the kind of show I like to do. I think you both made this point that, you know, you responded to this kind of show. If it's a happy song, whatever, it's what interests you. It's what gets you going. So I guess what I would like to say is, can we figure out a way to say to someone listening, give yourself permission to do something that you're excited about, even if something in you thinks this isn't what the judges want to see. It's not, I want to make the point that it's not only about the winning. You know, like Byron, you said that very clearly. So can we make that point? And I would like just to somehow empower that guard person that's listening right now, that they would love to do this happy show or a pop tune or whatever, because it seems right for their group. But
right.
Then they think, yeah, I can't do that. Like, how can we empower them right now? What can we say to them that, one, winning is not the most important thing, and two, it's okay to follow that vision?
Well, I think that, you know, and not every show that I've done has been like, I've done my ballads, you know, before, and just happened to that song. I just loved it and decided I want to do it, and it made me happy, even though it was a ballad. But
sure.
I think for anyone, you know, if there's somebody who is like worried to try that, bring it in and try it on your kids. You know, write a flag phrase or a rifle phrase or this, you know, a movement moment for maybe even a couple of tunes or songs that you're considering, and see what gels with the kids that you have. I mean, you know, it's each show, I think, is very dependent on, like we've said already, you know, having the kids really buy into it. And if they, you know, if they also instantly click with it, that can be inspiring for you. If you're on the fence about trying something and you do it with your kids and it just, you know, clicks, then that really, I think, helps to kind of set you free to go for it. You know, so try a couple options on a Saturday. Let's spin to this song. Let's spin to this song. Let's try this. Let's just set up this moment on the floor and see if it could be fun or cool. And that can kind of be your jumping off point. Maybe it can also be the, you know, thing that says, oh, well, maybe not. But, you know, there's no harm, no foul in just trying it. Even if it's on a Saturday with you and your staff and your team before you really get underway with designing the show.
I agree with that. I think that workshopping is a great opportunity to just see little snippets of things coming to life. But I think that I think that the specifically to the young instructors, the young designers of today, I think that you have to allow yourself to make mistakes and to not beat yourself up over something that you feel super passionately about. I've done shows before, as I'm sure Derek has, as I'm sure that many people that have been a part of this, these podcast recordings in a color guard design or percussion design standpoint, we have all been completely invested in a program before that was a massive failure, you know, and that's okay, because without those massive failures, you're never going to grow as an artist. And, you know, just because something failed, maybe, in terms of competitively, it might not have failed with you, in your soul, you know, like something that might have been a massive failure and might have scored a, you know, 40 at the first regional. You might look at it and just be like, well, I love it. And in the long run, I think loving what you're doing is what makes you a good instructor. It's what makes you a good, you know, and in that same breath, making sure, and it's exactly what Derek said, making sure that your kids equally, you know, that your performers love it equally. Because if you've got, you know, 20, 30 kids that are absolutely enamored with the program and you're absolutely enamored with the program, and you find that the audience is absolutely enamored with the program, and you take that adorable program out and it scores a 40 at the first regional, who cares? Who cares? You know, like, so that 40 is going to be written down on the internet for a couple of months, and then it's going to go away and no one's going to care anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, because you're going to be left with the memories of, I loved that show, and my kids loved that show, and the audience loved that show. You know, and I think that that's what's very important. So I challenge the young designers of today, don't be afraid to make mistakes. And if you feel like something is an awesome idea, but there's a bug gnawing in the back of your head saying that's probably not going to do very well, slap the bug away. Just and do it. Just do it, right? You just have to give it a shot, because you never know. It might be the best thing out there since sliced bread.
That takes a lot of confidence. A lot.
It does. It's yep. Well said, though. I mean, like Byron said, how are you gonna know unless you try it? I mean, and I think that anyone who is still involved in the activity, every single year you might think, oh, this year I've got it figured out and I'm going to do this and I'm going to try this. And I know every single one of us every year finds more and more ways to improve and hopefully more ways to make the experience even better for the kids. So, you know, if you're just starting or you've been doing it for 30 years, just, you got to give it a go, whatever it is, lane you're going down, you know?
And you think about some of the programs that are the most memorable and, well, you know, memorable to people like me and I think all of us that have been watching for a significant amount of time now. But, you know, you think about the groups that have super hyper memorable performances, like, you know, Alliance of Miami with Hotel California, right? And yeah. Escapade Any Year, and Northmont when they did Dante's Inferno, and any of the late 90s, early James Logans, you know, the boxing show, and you think about these shows that were just everybody with the Peacock show and the S&M show and these shows that were absolutely outlandish, but were adored by the audience. And some were also adored competitively and some were not adored competitively. But you think about these shows, there's a reason why those shows had that magic spark. And it's because the person that was behind it believed in that concept full force. And, you know, I think that too often these days, I don't know, you know, I look at shows and I just think to myself, if I hope that this doesn't come across as offensive, because I certainly don't mean it like that, but there are some shows, much like you said, Tim, that you watch, and certainly I love a good ballad. You know, I love a good lesbian folk song. I love a good ballad. I love something that's gonna grab me by, that's gonna literally grab me by my throat and force a tear out of my, you know, cold, dead heart. I love shows like that, and I love shows that make me think. But there are some shows that I see that I just think to myself, what was the motivation? You know, what am I supposed to get from that? And it's not necessarily that I didn't enjoy the show, but it's just that I received no emotional, giving from that performance. So I'm unable to give you anything emotionally back. And if that was your goal, then, you know, good on you. I guess you achieved it. But I think in this activity, you know, being able to capture some emotions from the audience is kind of why we do it, right? You know, you want people to feel something.
For sure. Yep. And you know that the grandma in the audience who's watching just knows the one that she liked the best and the one that was the most memorable. And, you know, that might be the group that comes in, you know, 10th out of 11 or, you know, whatever. And it just doesn't, you impacted that person. She doesn't know what a sheet is and she doesn't know how numbers are assigned. And, you know, I think that a lot of people are like that, in the activity, both just spectators and instructors who then become spectators and performers who then become spectators. You know, yeah, there's always this competition thing, but like Byron said, at the end of the day, you just, regardless if it was perfectly designed or perfectly put together or, you know, everyone nailed whatever toss perfectly or not, you just remember what the piece of the performers that they left on the floor for you or gave to you during the performance. And that's what we all take away. And no one even remembers probably from this past year what score or place most people got at any given regional. But we do remember, as with every year, the shows that, you know, Byron listed off a whole bunch, you know, just like that, that just, you know, popped into my head. You can see a clear picture of all these shows, even though they might have been 10, 15, 20 years ago, they just stick with you. And right. That is just really special. And just, it becomes part of those, part of your memories and your logbook of why you love Wintergard. Those moments just kind of never go away. It's funny that, Byron brought up the Alliance of Miami, because I remember my very first Wintergard show ever. I was marching in Forte. I was 16 years old and had missed our little exhibition performance because of some high school band thing. And my first show was the, we drove out to the Boston Regional that year, which was quite eye-opening. I had never seen really any other Wintergards. And we saw Alliance of Miami when they did the When a Man Loves a Woman show. And I'll never forget that as long as I live. They came out and they threw those pool cues up in the air and rolled on the floor. And I lost it, you know, and just that mm-hmm. just those individual moments just are stuck in your head. And there's just a million of them. And it's just really special when people are able to create that.
I love that. Well, I love that you guys are talking about that there's way more than one way to define success for a show, for a season, for a performer. And I guess that's what I want everybody to make sure they're taking away from this, you know. And if you have a vision, you know, check it out with people. Make sure you're putting it together in a way that your kids can be successful. But then, you know, like you guys said, embrace it. Do it. You know, if it doesn't go out so great, who cares? You know, we're putting on a show, right?
Right. You know, like you said, embrace it. Embrace your happiness. Embrace what makes you happy. You know, once upon a time, you as a performer saw someone toss a rifle in the air. You saw someone toss a saber in the air and you thought to yourself, that looks awesome. That makes me happy. Mm-hmm. I want to do that. Recall mm-hmm. that feeling and recall things in your life that make you happy, that give you that feeling of joy and happiness and completion, and do a show about it.
Yeah. That's wonderful.
Cool.
I mean, it just brought mm-hmm. back a whole memory for me too about, you know, like feeling the crack of a rifle inside of your hands or anything like that. I mean, you're just right. And so many people can associate that, and bring all those people in with you is such a terrific idea.
Right.
I love it. Well, I have to remind my clients all the time, I'm working with marching bands and they get all wound up. And I can't tell you how many times I'll stop and go, okay, guys, now we're putting on a show. This is supposed to be fun.
Right.
So I guess that would be what I want to say.
Do you remember
in
when
conclusion.
You were like kids? And you were like kids and you used to be with your cousins and you used to be like, let's put on a show.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
One of the smartest things that's ever been said to me was by Michael Cesario, who, you know, I'm blessed to be able to work with at FJM, and he is an absolute fountain of knowledge when it comes to a lot of things. But one of the best things that he said, you have to remember why we exist. We exist because people are paying tickets to come and watch. People are paying for tickets to come and watch. And when those ticket payers walk out of the, you know, of the football arena or the, you know, or the basketball gym, wherever, do you want those people to look at themselves and say, what did we just look at? You know, what did we just watch? Or do you want them to look at each other and say, do you remember that show? And do you remember that show? And you have to accommodate the people that are making, you know, they're making it, are making us able to do what we do, I guess is what I'm trying to say. We have to sometimes think about the, you know, the Joe audience member as much as we're thinking about the, you know, the judge.
Well, agreed.
Well said.
Yeah. And the two of you are here tonight because you're examples of people, designers, instructors, who have proven that you don't have to do a somber show to be competitively successful or successful just for a show that people love. So I just want everybody out there to, you know, go check out these guys' shows if you haven't seen a lot of them. And, you know, I so appreciate what you guys bring to the table. So in conclusion, Mary, any final thoughts before we go?
No, it's so many great ideas about really getting to the roots of what makes you happy and really knowing kids. We always talk about that. Knowing kids and giving kids success and having kids work is all a part of what we talked about tonight. And it's really, it's gratifying to talk with these guys tonight.
Wonderful. Derek, any final words you want to say?
I appreciate being here. It was a really good time. And I mean, you know, who doesn't love to sit around and talk about Color Guard, you know? So it's was a great opportunity, and I'm really glad to, have been a part of it. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for being here. Byron, you get the final word. Anything you want to say?
It was an honor to be asked to do this, and it was an honor to get to, you know, be able to speak with Derek and yourself and Mary about this. And this is something that I think that I do feel strongly about, is being passionate about the programs that you're involved in. And, you know, they don't always all have to be happy, but a little bit of happiness goes a long way. And, and sometimes it's, you know, it's okay to do something that scares you a little bit, but you know deep down is going to put a big smile on your face. Embrace that smile and have fun.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. You were just great. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Hear more podcasts about design and Color Guard at our website at marchingroundtable.com. Click on Podcast Archives and then search for topics that interest you. Find out about upcoming podcasts and guests by signing up for a free VIP membership at marchingroundtable.com. Then you'll receive our bi-weekly newsletter and access to special podcasts and materials. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/marchingroundtable. Make sure to add us to your interest list so you'll see our updates on Facebook. And follow us on Twitter at @marchroundtable. Thanks again to our sponsor, the Marching Roundtable Judges Academy, found at judgesacademy.com. Thanks to our editor, Aaron Osborne. And thanks again to Byron and Derek for joining us. And thanks to you for listening. The Marching Roundtable now has over 1,000 VIP members, listeners, and fans who are following our podcast closely. If you or your company sponsor one of our podcasts, you'll have the ears of these listeners and many more like them who download thousands of podcasts each month, hearing your sponsor message. These listeners also could see your ad on every page of our website, plus see your company name and a link to your website on our bi-weekly newsletter, or where our podcasts are located. Find out more by clicking on Sponsorship Opportunities at our website at marchingroundtable.com, or contact Tim at tim@marchingroundtable.com. Our listeners are the exact audience you're trying to reach.